Welcome to Blood, Sweat, and Cells, real talk about sickle cell disease. I'm your host, Valerie Bay, board member with the Heart of Gold Sickle Cell Foundation of Northern Virginia. The holidays are a time for family, food, and celebration, but for people with compromised immune systems, like those living with sickle cell disease, foodborne illnesses can be more than just an inconvenience. It can lead to dehydration, trigger pain crisis, or even require hospitalization. So while food poisoning might give the average person a rough night, it could be much more serious for someone with sickle cell disease. Today, we're joined by Jody King and Ian Armstrong, environmental health specialists with the Fairfax County Health Department. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, we're excited to be here.
Now, Jody, let's start off with just some basic information. During the holidays, we see, you know, buffet tables, potlucks, big family dinners, all the things that make this time of year special, but also increase the risk of foodborne illnesses. Let's talk about what a few food or drinks can be riskier for foodborne illnesses, especially for somebody with a weakened immune system.
Yeah, great question. So first food that comes to mind when we talk about highly susceptible populations would definitely be meat. So we just want to ensure that we're fully cooking our meat to the proper cook temperature. So first and foremost, one of the most common meats cooked during the holidays would be turkey. So we want to ensure turkey and any other poultry is cooked to 165 degrees. And if we're stuffing our turkey, we want to make sure that the stuffing is also cooked to 165 degrees as well. Most ham is a commercially pre-cooked product. So we just want to ensure that it is reheated per se to 135 degrees before serving. And then if you're going to be adventurous and cook any roast, we recommend looking at the FDA chart that outlines temperatures and cook times to ensure that it's meeting the proper temperature for serving. But the main idea behind, you know, ensuring that we're cooking our meats fully is because Salmonella, E. coli, and Campylobacter can definitely propagate with not fully cooked meats. Other food products that we would be concerned about during the holidays would be casseroles, any other salad, any products with dairy, mashed potatoes, macaroni. We want to ensure that these food products are kept hot or cold. So when we say hot, we want to ensure that it's kept at 135 degrees or above, and cold would be 41 degrees or less. But any like pies or any dairy-based desserts definitely should be kept under refrigeration as well.
Yeah. Now, you know, I wouldn't think about pies because that's something that people frequently leave out during the holidays. Now, what about seafood dishes?
Yeah, great question. I know some people like to be adventurous with seafood as well during the holidays. So seafood should be cooked to 145 degrees as well to ensure that it's fully cooked. And again, if you are going to leave it out for extended periods of time, it should be kept at 135 degrees or above.
Yeah. Now, what about stuff like shrimp or whatever? Should they keep that on ice, would you say?
Yeah, again, any meats, if you're going to keep cold instead of hot, should be kept at 41 degrees or less. Mm-hmm. But if you do just want to have it out and not worry about temperature control, we would recommend that after 4 hours it is discarded of, because certain bacteria can propagate that we can't reheat out per se. Right.
Yeah. Now, Ian, what about holiday drinks and different cheeses?
Right. So some of these are my personal favorites. Some people may like something like eggnog. Other people like the traditional holiday ciders. So it's important to think about what goes into those items. A lot of the commercially processed and prepared eggnog is available and pasteurized already in the carton at the grocery store. However, if you wanted to venture out and make your own, that is perfectly fine. There are also pasteurized alternatives for raw shell eggs and carton eggs that you can use to make your own at home that will be just as good. For things like your raw milk cheeses, as long as it's purchased from a grocery store that has held and handled them properly, those raw milk cheeses should be safe to consume. But it's important to think about unpasteurized raw milk cheeses and soft cheeses always pose a risk of carrying listeria. I know that there's been some outbreaks recently that we've all heard about, so just keep that in mind. For all of your other dairy products, except for Parmesan cheese, you will want to keep cold. So Parmesan is the one that we will say is the hard cheese, and that's okay to leave out.
Okay. Well, that's a lot of great information. Ian, let's talk about prevention too. I mean, are there some simple, practical food safety steps people can take to stay healthy and still enjoy the holidays?
So there are a lot of steps that we would recommend, but the most important ones will start with the basics of washing your hands. This one is a normal daily practice that we all want to participate in, but especially when you're preparing those foods during the holiday season. So we recommend washing your hands often. So this means before, during, and after preparation tasks, whether that be handling raw meats, any eggs, seafood, poultry, anything that could be an allergen for those of us who are experiencing the holidays with people who have allergies, or any other ready-to-eat foods like produce, even if it's ready to go, you might still want to wash your hands before and after handling those items to make sure that nothing's being contaminated. And if you're really worried about that this holiday season, using tongs or any other sort of barrier methods to handle those foods without even involving your bare hands is more than okay to do.
Now, let's see. I know that, you know, hand washing is really good. And we did talk about keeping hot foods hot and cold foods cold.
Right.
And what about a food thermometer? Would you recommend using a food thermometer?
Yes. Yes. As inspectors for the health department, we use thermometers all day long. And it is not a bad thing for you to use one in your home. It cuts out all of the guesswork for whether or not food is at the proper temperature, whether that's cooking, holding it at a buffet, if you have a large family gathering this holiday season, or you have friends over. And using some methods like warming trays, Sterno, slow cookers, things like that can really help you keep things at the proper temperature.
Okay, that's good to know then. Now, when people store raw food in the fridge with cooked food and vegetables and fruit, what do they need to know?
Right, so this is a personally contentious thing with my family and I. So really what we want to do is we want to be as safe as we can, especially if we're having people come in to our home. So one of these things that we can do is store all of that raw meat, anything that could leak down in your refrigerator, on anything that's pre-prepared, anything that could be contaminated, just store all of that raw meat down at the bottom. That way, nothing will drip into anything that might not be cooked or is already cooked and ready to go, and you can just be as safe as possible.
Okay. Yeah, that's something I don't think a lot of people think about. They just automatically just throw the food in the fridge and not thinking what's on top or what's on the bottom. Now, Jody, I think we all know people, including myself, who have thawed their turkey or leftovers on the counter. Let's clear that up. Is that ever okay?
I agree with you. You know, I used to implement this practice myself as well, but truthfully, it's not a safe practice. We don't recommend it. The reason being is because when you leave food out on the countertop, it promotes uneven thawing. So we find that the outside portions of the food product are much warmer than the inside. This practice also just promotes the growth of E. coli and salmonella. So just don't recommend it for any food item, especially raw meat. Some safer methods would be to put a frozen food under continuous cold running water to help thaw it. I know this isn't ideal for most people, but you could microwave the frozen food or cook it directly from frozen. Or the most common method that we recommend would to be put the frozen food in the refrigerator a day or two before that you want to use it and let it thaw under a controlled temperature.
Okay. Yeah, I you know, talked to some people who said, oh, I don't know about that. I don't know if it's all that dangerous because it still feels cold. It's safe. But that's not the case, though.
Yeah, that's, again, like one of the most important reasons why we recommend using a thermometer is, you know, a food can feel cold, but what's the actual temperature? Once it's above 41 degrees, or below 135 degrees, that's what we call the danger zone. So it really just, that's the time where bacteria, again, grow the most and the most dangerous time for a food to be in that temperature range.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. Now, when I was a kid, I don't know if you did this, you know, baking cookies is always something that everyone likes to do, but is it safe to eat the raw cookie dough?
Yeah, I won't lie. I still do this myself at times, but it definitely isn't a best practice. And the reason why is because unpasteurized eggs and flour can contain harmful bacteria like E. coli and salmonella. So I know it's really tempting, but we just really recommend, especially for people that are in the highly susceptible population, to avoid doing this practice. Now, today, there are a lot of grocery stores that sell a ready-to-eat cookie dough product. I've seen it at Walmart, Wegmans. So if you're really craving that cookie dough this holiday season, I definitely would recommend just taking a look at your local grocery store.
Okay. Or just waiting till it comes out the oven, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Ian, what are some other unsafe habits or myths that you've heard about during the holidays?
So I guess we'll start with one that may be a little bit contentious and I've heard about a lot personally, is rinsing or cleaning your raw poultry or other meats. So we're not going to tell you that you can't. There is a risk that we want to keep in mind of spreading any of that bacteria from that raw meat onto any of your other surfaces, whether that is your sink, cutting board, knives, things like that. So as long as you keep that in mind and you go back and you clean any of those surfaces that are contaminated afterwards, go ahead and wash any of that raw meat that you want to. And yeah, sanitizer is your best friend. Just go back, make sure everything's clean and ready to go.
Okay. And how about reheating foods?
So reheating is also really important, especially when you think about your leftovers and what you want to use later. Mm-hmm. So you want to kind of strategize and think about not reheating things too often, right? You want to keep things out of the danger zone, as Jody spoke about earlier, as much as possible. So if you've got a large portion of your macaroni and cheese this holiday season and it's been in the fridge for a day and you want to reheat some of it, by all means, go ahead and do it. But you might want to portion it out. Take a little bit out of that larger container, put it in microwave that portion, leave the rest in the fridge to keep it safe and at a proper temperature.
Okay, that's good advice. Yeah. Now, what about taste testing food that may be spoiled? Can people really judge something, how safe it is, by tasting it?
We would not recommend necessarily going directly and tasting it. So my rationale is, if there's a question, play it safe. There's nothing wrong with foregoing that item, but you can also use some of those other senses that you've got to kind of feel it out and see if that's something that you really do want to eat. Looking at it, making sure there's no mold growing on it or it doesn't look how it shouldn't look, or smelling it and seeing if it smells like it should smell. But again, if there's any question, it's perfectly fine to forego and not have that food item.
Now, many of our listeners, including myself, travel when visiting family during the holidays. And, you know, like I'm going to be bringing a dish to my sister's house. Is there a safe way to transport when you're on the go?
Right. So there is, and you can do it safely.
Okay.
As long as you keep in mind some of our previous points about keeping things in the proper temperature area. When you're transporting those cold foods, you will still want to keep them cold. So using insulated coolers and ice packs is a great idea if you're traveling, and just make sure that you've got enough to span the distance to where you're traveling. The same thing goes with hot foods, insulated bags and containers, or using slow cookers. Some of them even plug into a car. I've never seen that personally, but I've heard that it's a thing. So being ingenuitive about how you can keep things warm is perfectly fine in using those things.
Jody, what are some other ways that cross-contamination happens in home kitchens? And how can families prevent it? I mean, we mentioned a few unsafe practices earlier in the conversation, such as, you know, not storing raw meats above cooked foods, washing hands. What about cleaning surfaces and utensils?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think this is something that most households forget to do, per se. So we definitely just want to make sure that everybody is properly cleaning and sanitizing any surfaces, dishware, and utensils after using them, especially after touching or handling raw meat. So when we say wash, we want to wash any utensil, dishware, cutting boards, etc., with soap and water, and then rinse with water, and then sanitize. And when we say sanitize, we don't mean hand sanitizer. We mean using a diluted chemical like bleach to eliminate bacterial growth. Again, most importantly to do after any handling or preparing any raw meats, but really just changing any like food product between, we want to make sure that we're washing, rinsing, and sanitizing. So the USDA recommends an easy homemade version of a sanitizer solution you can make, which would be taking 1 tablespoon of bleach or chlorine and per 1 gallon of water. And that is a great household sanitizer that you can use for your surfaces or your dishware utensils. But most residential dishwashing machines are also capable of sanitizing your dishware utensils. So you just throw them in the dishwasher after you're done, that's an easy way to make sure that they're properly clean and sanitized as well.
Oh, that's good. Now, one thing I forgot to ask is about cutting boards. Should you have a separate cutting board, Jody, for your fruits and meats?
That's definitely a good practice to have, and that's what I do at home as well. We just want to eliminate as much cross-contamination risk as we can. So that is an easy and practical way to limit the amount of cross-contamination that's happening in your home. Yes.
Okay. Okay, great. Now, Ian, you know, we love leftovers, don't we? You know, after a great holiday meal. But how long are leftovers actually safe to keep? And what's the best way to store them?
So making sure that your properly cooled leftovers, after they're 100% done cooling, that you cover them in the fridge. That is great to keep it from being contaminated. But also, per our FDA guidance, the recommendation is to only keep it for 3 to 4 days. That is keeping in mind the previous conversation that we had about things looking and smelling safe. You still have a question and it's day three. That doesn't 100% say that it's good to go. But generally, 3 to 4 days for leftovers is going to be your timeline. And if you're worried about wasting food and you don't want to throw it away, there's nothing wrong with freezing the food after it's fully done. And once it's fully frozen solid, you can keep it in the freezer indefinitely. The one thing to keep in mind is that doesn't promise anything about the quality of that food or how the taste may change depending on how long you keep it in the freezer, but it should be safe at the end.
Okay. Now, you mentioned something that another question I meant to ask you about, and that is when you have a hot dish, do you have to wait for it to cool before you put it in the refrigerator?
Right. So I'll try to make this, sometimes it can get a little bit convoluted, but I'll try to make it as easy as possible. So Our general rule of thumb is it is okay to leave out to cool down a little bit before you put it in the fridge. That earlier, thermometer's your best friend. Mm-hmm. So once that item hits 135 degrees, your active cooling time period has started. So we want to go and, if you want to, make an ice bath, or at that point in time, if you have the ability and the space to do it, put it in the freezer to cool it down as quickly as possible. The 135 is the benchmark where cooling actively starts. We want to prevent bacterial growth. Yeah, and from that starting point, you've got no more than 2 hours to get to 70 degrees. And this whole process down to 41 should take you no more than 6 hours.
Okay.
As long as you follow those parameters and reach those benchmarks, you should be good to go.
Okay. Okay, good. Thank you. Now, Jody, and I know sometimes people get little colds and what have you, but they think it's still okay to mingle and cook. But if somebody is sick with a virus or cold, even if they wear gloves, should they still help prepare food?
Yeah, unfortunately, and I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but we don't recommend anybody that's feeling under the weather to be handling or preparing food. And if everyone else is, you know, okay with this person being around during a gathering, great. They just probably, again, should avoid direct contact with food that others will be consuming, especially if kids are involved, any other people with immunocompromised immune systems.
So. Okay. Yeah, I agree with you on that. Yeah, absolutely. Now, Ian, at the grocery store, is there anything that people should be aware of? Like, what happens if you find picking up meat and it's leaking or unrefrigerated items?
So this is another one of those cases where we say if there's a question about it, there's nothing wrong with putting that item back on the shelf and not getting that item, replacing it with an alternative that still has the packaging intact and is safe. It's also important to keep in mind if it is raw meat and the package is leaking, you'll want to wash your hands afterwards. However, for all of your items, whether that is in the cereal aisle or it is some of your raw meats in the freezer aisle or the refrigerated aisle, you want all of that packaging to be safe and sound and together because you don't know where it's been transported from, and you just want to be as safe as you can.
Okay, that makes sense then. Jody, what about canned goods?
Yeah, I feel like this is an under topic. But you really shouldn't purchase or use any cans that are dented, especially when it's dented on the seam or the seal. This is because it promotes the growth of bacterial growth if the seam or seal is actually broken. So if you see any at the grocery store, definitely steer clear of those. Or if you find any in your pantry, you know, from a couple months ago or years ago, just would avoid using those, and it's safer to just discard of them. Also, with that being said, if you do open a can and you don't fully finish the product, we do need you to refrigerate the food after it's been open. But just in general, recommend checking dates, packaging in general, of any food item, even if it's not in a can. And if it looks off, don't purchase it or don't use it.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Thank you so much, Jody and Ian. That's great information. I hope everyone is paying attention and will take some of this advice, because a little awareness goes a long way in preventing illness and keeping the holidays joyful and safe and healthy.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. For more information on food safety, you can visit the Fairfax County Health Department's website at fairfaxcounty.gov/health/food. I've also included that link along with additional food safety resources in the show notes. If this episode was helpful, please share it with someone in the sickle cell community and follow us on our social platforms for more real talk and resources. Thank you for listening to Blood, Sweat, and Cells, real talk about sickle cell disease. Stay tuned for upcoming episodes where we'll continue sharing practical health tips and support for those living with sickle cell disease.